Yes. Chris Johnson's on the phone right now, and I was just about to start rambling. CJ, how's it going this fine Friday?
I thought you were saying I've been struggling, and that was your transition.
No, not at
Speaking
all.
Speaking of struggle, Chris Johnston, this guy, I don't know what's going on with his reporting lately. Because I haven't had a single trade to break down. It's bothering me.
Yet. No, it's all good. How are you guys doing?
Good. We're chilling. We're breaking down this game last night. There were some positives, some negatives. But right now, we are trying to understand. And CJ, you might have to explain it to us like we're five, like Michael Scott would say. On The Office, why do the Leafs struggle so badly on 3-on-3 when they're so lethal offensively?
I don't know if I'm willing to say it. Like, obviously, they have struggled this year, but it doesn't make sense to me if they play enough games at that game state that they wouldn't have success. So I'm not sure if maybe it's a mindset thing. Obviously, a lot of focus on who started the period or who didn't. But I don't have a good answer, I guess, is the best way to put it. And so I'd like to see them play more 3-on-3s before I say they can't do it, but the early results have not been encouraging.
No, and I think, 16 and 18 over the last 3 years in overtime at 3-on-3. So it's a losing record, which does kind of surprise me a little bit. But when you look
here's a thought. Look, 3-on-3, if you go down the ice and you miss a chance, usually the other team's coming back with a breakaway or a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
So, you know, while we might think they're not attacking enough, maybe they've been too aggressive at times. And you know, it wasn't the case in how last night's game got lost. Obviously, that's a turnover in their own zone. But, you know, when I think of 3-on-3, it's like watching water go in one direction and the other. And I guess the Leafs haven't got enough saves in overtime.
Well, it's almost interesting. And last night, this wouldn't have been an option for them, obviously. But, like, when I look at the statistics and I see Morgan Rielly been on the ice for 11 goals against at 3-on-3, you know, when you think about Rielly defending a 2-on-1 in that aspect where you go down Matthews and Marner, let's say, get an opportunity, and then it goes the other way, he's got to defend that 2-on-1. It's not really his bread and butter. But a guy like DJ Brody or Jake Muzzin would be much better off doing that. I wonder if maybe going forward, instead of having Morgan Rielly, like, just be that extra offensive defenseman out there, you know, you maybe pair him up, like, those two guys up or whichever combination of forwards with a more reliable defender.
Well, what I'm open to is any change, really, because as much as it doesn't matter in terms of what we talk about this team big picture, you know, there's going to be no 3-on-3 when they're playing playoff games,
right?
At least unless there's four minor penalties called at the same time. But, you know, the points that they're letting slip away could matter in terms of, you know, securing home ice advantage or something like that. And so I think it bears some experimentation, which is something, of course, Sheldon Keefe likes to do, and you know, it's probably enough at this point where you can't just ignore it and be like, okay, that's a couple random games. And so, you know, you're already seeing some change with the personnel he's starting, going with gut feel, keeping Austin Matthews on the bench last night to start the overtime period. Maybe you shake it up defensively too.
Okay, so what I was about to say before we pulled you in and I was talking about struggling, I know he got the power play goal last night and an assist as well, but Austin Matthews still just one goal at 5-on-5 in his last 16 games and a sub 4% shooting percentage. What is going on here, CJ? I noticed last night he was leaning kind of more on that one-timer slap shot even than he was on the wrist shot. Do you think he's just trying anything to get himself going right now?
Yeah, it's sort of a bizarre funk because, you know, no one scores goals at 5-on-5, you know, since Austin Matthews has entered the league better than him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, remember that rookie year didn't include all that many power play goals, you know, I suppose this is there's some positives in that he seems to be scoring with more regularity on the power play, which isn't something he's, believe it or not, always done during his career. I think because of the way teams have been able to fade him and you know, cover him off and neutralize him. So the fact he's breaking through there is a positive. But you know, 5-on-5 has been a struggle. I think, you know, there was a time certainly earlier in the year, I don't know if it's as much the case now, but where he and Marner just didn't seem to be at their usual level, clicking the way they are, or the way they have so consistently. So that's probably factored into it. But, yeah, I just have to believe we've seen him do this for so long that he's going to find his way out of it. I don't mind having him and Marner apart for now. I think that they've unlocked something a little bit there. And obviously Nylander's, you know, having a pretty good year. Tavares is having a good year. So I think that's something worth exploring. But, you know, for Matthews, it's just about getting, you know, it's volume. I mean, the guy shoots so well, so uniquely. If he just keeps pouring shots on net, it's, you know, he's going to start scoring more at even strength.
Yeah, I liked what John Tavares had to say about him yesterday. He said that right now, Auston Matthews is carrying himself exactly the same way that he did when he scored 50-plus goals in that 50-game stretch. Is that impressive to you, the way that he's so even-keeled?
Yeah, I think that's part of what makes him special. I mean, there's the physical gifts, which are apparent, and all the hard work he's put in over the years to develop and change his shot and his release and all those things. But, you know, this guy also has a mentality that's made him, you know, one of the best athletes that does what he does. You know, I think one of Auston's real strengths in general is he doesn't get distracted by any amount of noise that you know, those like us make.
Can't throw us under the bus. Come on.
it's just everywhere in the city. But
totally.
I don't think he doubts himself, honestly, which is a really difficult thing to do. I mean, even athletes that make the NHL, I think confidence is such a huge separator for them. And when things go well, I mean, obviously the Devils are a great example of this. That there wasn't much confidence on that team last year, and all of a sudden here they have ripped off 11 straight wins, and they're playing a certain way. I think what's great about Auston is he just does what he does and lets the results come over time. I mean, he's been through scoring droughts in the past, you know, 5 or 6 games here or there. Usually doesn't let it go any longer than that. And you know, that's not even what we're talking about now. He's at least, you know, found the back of the net recently with some power play goals and contributed that way. And so, you know, I think the fact that he's able to do that does give you confidence it's going to, you know, churn his way, because I'm not going to bet on 18 strange games, you know, versus the 400 or whatever we've seen before that.
Pulled up in coordinating Dior satchel.
I did
and
see
shoes.
This.
Like, the
I
man is unbothered. He cannot be shaken.
We're chatting with Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider. And look, you do got to give credit to the team on the other side last night, though, the New Jersey Devils. As you noted, that's 11 straight wins now for that club. And they're a real solid team. What about their game impresses you the most, CJ?
I think what impresses me is that if you look over the course of this winning streak, they actually haven't won a lot of games like last night's. I mean, they've been winning pretty one-sided. They've controlled the puck. They don't give it up too often. And they've got 4 lines that are doing damage. And you know, I absolutely think that they're a team that's for real, that I don't think this is just a flash-in-the-pan start. Or, I mean, you know, obviously there's some good fortune that comes in whenever a team rips off 11 straight wins. But, you know, they've done it in pretty dominant fashion. And, you know, even in last night's game, you know, I think if we're being, you know, honest, the Leafs were probably fortunate to get a point. You know, the Devils played a pretty strong game, and you know, obviously Toronto tied it up late in regulation. But, you know, they've been thoroughly impressive from top to bottom. They're dealing with an injury to their, you know, top goaltender right now, Wedgwood, Mackenzie Blackwood, pardon me. And, you know, they're still just rolling along. So this is a team that's taken the next step. Their young players are better than we thought. Jesper Bratt was a 6th-round pick and is scoring more than a goal a game, or point a game, rather. And you know, I just think that top to bottom, they're a strong team.
Here's my personal beef, CJ, and the thing that was bothering me all throughout the game last night. I was watching the way that New Jersey played, so suffocating, so fast. They don't have big grizzly guys that are going to scare you out of the rink, but they are really annoying and hard to play against. And my thought the entirety of the game was, why don't the Leafs play like this? Because they're pretty similar in their personnel, aren't they?
They are, and I think it's a relevant question. You know, I'm still not really sure what the Leafs are, as much as, you know, we've seen this
score
for so long. There's been a lot of sort of changes around the margins, and then there's new players, and obviously for all the lineup twisting we've seen, it's not all been done just because of injuries. I mean, I think that they're still looking for an identity. I would think that obviously the team as it exists today won't be the team that goes into the playoffs. There's going to be trades and the like and changes throughout the season. But, you know, I do think the Leafs need to find that on a certain level. And I'm not alone. I mean, people that I talk to around the sport kind of ask about where the I don't know what the right word is, killer instinct. You know, I'm not out here saying that they need to add a bunch of fighters or anything like that. Obviously,
yeah,
the game changed, but you want players that can really play you hard consistently right through your lineup, and because in the playoffs that pays off so much. And I think, you know, when I look at Tampa, that's one thing that I see there. Even some of their smaller, you know, in stature guys like Braden Point, for example, they you know, they're full value. They cut right through the middle of the ice. And so, you know, I think that there's still room for the Leafs to get there, but to me, it's probably played a little bit into some of their inability to get over the hump is that they're missing some of that element. And I don't know if it's as easy as going and trading for one or two guys and that it works that way. I almost feel like it's a mindset. And so, we'll watch and see if they can develop something that looks like that.
Yeah. When you said, I don't know who they are right now. That's what I was thinking last night. I don't know who they are right now. And I'm not sure that they do entirely right now either, because I think they keep looking at teams like Tampa and Colorado and heavier teams and want to play like them. But really, looking at New Jersey last night seemed like the best comparison.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a weird start, right? And it's pretty clear, and we don't make any harsh judgments this soon. We haven't even had U.S. Thanksgiving yet. But, they're in the second tier of teams in the league. I mean, we've seen teams like Boston and Jersey and Vegas and a couple others, rip off a crazy start to the season. Now that they don't win anything for that, it's a nice feather in their cap, but I can guarantee you the coaches and players in those places understand that they have to find a way to sustain it and build on it, or it's not going to matter too much that you had a hot October and first part of November.
Yeah.
Whereas that was one of Kyle Dubas's messages when he spoke to the reporters earlier this week, just talking about how he doesn't mind that there's been some challenges, because you find out about some players, you find out about your team, how they respond, who can go into that, because, really the season, you have to evolve and change. It's never static. But it's definitely fair to say from where we sit that the Leafs haven't been among the absolute best teams in the league. I don't think it's a crisis at this point, but they have to get better. And whether, the management watches enough games and they don't find it on their own and the solutions come from outside, in terms of player acquisitions or maybe the team's able to find a better game with what the parts they have. I mean, that's really what the next stretch of schedule is about.
Isn't it weird how we're now almost to American Thanksgiving and somehow goal scoring is the problem and goaltending has been fine? Like, I can't think of a game so far this year where we've sat here and said, goaltending loss in that game, they need to be better in that, considering how much worry there was going into the season. Now, you look at the last couple of games out of Matt Murray since returning. I mean, he's probably the sole reason why they pick up a point last night.
I hope that no one tunes out after I say this, but isn't it proof that we don't know a damn thing about what's going to happen?
Totally.
I guess so.
this is, I do think on a certain level, this is what makes sports compelling, is that just when you think you figure something out, you're in for a surprise. I mean, it can't all be predicted. I'm certainly a believer in the numbers and the underlying metrics. Like, I'm not out here shaming the analytics crowd, but the truth is it's still a game played by human beings, and there's all kinds of things that go on, and there's lots of things we can't predict. I mean, when you see it long enough, say with Auston Matthews goal scoring, I think you can be pretty confident that will return at a level that's made him one of the best in the game. But sometimes things like the goaltending performance, jump around, and it's not entirely unprecedented for someone like Ilya Samsonov, and I know he's out injured now, but to have a big season. He was a first-round draft pick. He's had some degree of success earlier in his NHL career. It hasn't gone so well from the last couple seasons, but, look at that. And as for the goal scoring, that's why there might be an argument to be had, and we're probably going to have it every Friday between now and March 3rd, which happens to be a Friday as well. That this year's trade deadline is kind of strange. It's on a Friday. But maybe the Leafs should use the cap space that it appears they're going to have with Jake Muzzin's injury to make an addition at forward rather than defense. It's sort of counterintuitive, given how important Muzzin was to their blue line and the fact they're kind of patching it together back there right now. But, maybe that's where this whole thing ends up, that they're shopping for help to boost the top six rather than one of the six defense spots.
Well, it's interesting to say that, because the GM meetings were in town this week, and obviously this is a time for them to meet and chat. Are trade talks starting to pick up at all? I mean, with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but also just kind of league-wide?
I think a little bit. I mean, certainly it seemed like there was some specific talks that happened that day, but, as much as I want to fan that kind of excitement, we did talk. I talked to David Poile a bit afterwards, and I said, with Thanksgiving coming up, is it picking up? And he said, no, I wish. It's been a weird start to the year. We really haven't seen a meaningful transaction yet. As much as there's some of those teams off to the hop starts I mentioned, we've had some teams that we're expecting to be good that have kind of muddled through the season. The Predators, I would say, are one of them. Even Toronto, Tampa. I mean, they're not right at the top of the standings. You know, St. Louis lost a whole bunch of games in a row. They're kind of normalized and won a few now. But, you know, I just think maybe that the league hasn't settled in yet. And you've got some surprise teams, right? Seattle and Chicago, even Arizona, haven't been nearly as bad as was expected of them, you know, through this start of the season. And so I think it might take a little bit more time for things to open up. But, you know, that being said, there's a few teams out there looking for defensemen at the moment. The Ottawa Senators probably at the top of the list. And you know, perhaps, you know, we'll start to see one or two. There'll be a little bit of a trickle-down effect. But the truth is most of the trade activity is going to happen in January and February leading into the deadline. That's kind of the way it always is. We've got a cap-strapped league, and you know, I don't think it'll really start firing up till the other side of Christmas.
What do you think the domino is going to be? This summer, the coaching market was kind of stalemated until everybody knew what Barry Trotz wanted to do. What do you think the domino is going to be on the trade market? Is it going to be something as simple as seeing what the heck Jacob Chychrun looks like right now?
Well, that's the most obvious answer for me, just because this is a player who originally has to be traded about 12 months ago. Now he hasn't played a game in 7 months, which I think complicates moving him because, you know, obviously the Coyotes are asking for, you know, pretty high return, you know, looking for 2 first round draft picks or something equivalent to that in a deal. You know, he's due to return to the Coyotes lineup on Monday, which, you know, there's some hope that that'll spark interest again, especially as teams and scouts get to see him play, you know, a bunch of games and see how he's recovered from, he had an ankle procedure and a wrist surgery in the off season. So, you know, not only has he not played for a while, he's coming back from injury. But you know, if he plays well, I think the Arizona would like to move him sooner than later. And so that could be the first domino. It's certainly, if you're a team that knows you're likely trading for a defenseman between now and the deadline, I mean, those teams will be all over this situation because it's the best player, you know, for sure is going to be available. And it's not just a rental type of deal. You know, Jacob Chychrun still has 2 years on his contract beyond this current year. He's only 24 years old. So it's not the type of player that gets moved too often, I would say, in the NHL. And so he's kind of a special case, you know, when it comes to, you know, the UFAs, you know, one of them is John Klingberg in Anaheim. He's got a no movement clause until December 31st. So essentially he won't be traded until January at the earliest. You know, there's a few other less kind of big names, you know, Gavrikov in Columbus is a pending UFA, will probably be moved, but you know, those deals will happen later. So I think the Chychrun probably is the first big domino. Of course, you know, there might be some random trade that's not really on the horizon right now, but you know, there'll be a few teams coveting him, and if they don't get him, they're going to have to try to find solutions elsewhere.
Last one for you. We're with Chris Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider. One of the things that did come of the GM meetings is something that we didn't really want to see, but sounds like no buckets, or you will have to be wearing a bucket.
Mandatory buckets.
Mandatory buckets. Are you just as upset about this as we are, CJ, where these guys won't be able to be bucketless during the warm-ups?
I'll admit that I'm torn because I enjoy the sort of National League talk.
Yeah.
And you know, I actually tweeted about it yesterday, but like Cole Caulfield took his rookie solo lap without a bucket.
Will that be affected?
That's the one thing that I do. So we're talking about this. If they can still go out and do the rookie solo lap, first game you go out, do your lap, and then grab your bucket once the pucks start flying around, will that still be okay? Or is it, if you're on the ice, you better have your bucket?
I'm going to have to seek a clarification there. I don't really know. I mean, that would seem fairly harmless. But, I mean, look, this is a mandatory rule. It's all driven by safety. And that's where I say I'm torn, because as much as fun as it can be, there are players that get dinged every single year in warm up and there's, you know, suffer an injury. And, you know, I would have thought the Taylor Hall thing like a decade ago would have probably ended no buckets in warm up forever. But, you know, it's finally upon us now. But yeah, it's going to be rare. We're, you know, just as we're down to the last few players that are not wearing visors, it won't be too long before everybody's wearing a bucket in warm up and we'll be watching the one last guy who can skate around with this flow blowing in the wind.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see what that ends up being, the last guy. There's not a whole lot of dudes out there. Like, Michael Pezzetta's been doing it, but what is it, 1920, if you've made your debut before the 1920 season, you're allowed to do it, so Pezzetta wouldn't even be allowed. That guy's got tremendous flow.
Exactly. And you know what? It's kind of funny, and it's a Leaf-related note, but I was looking at the rule when they brought in the grandfathered visors, and the rule was you had to have played at least 25 games in the NHL before 2013-14 at the time. And Jordy Benn, now with your Toronto Maple Leafs, had played 28 or 29. So he barely qualified at the time to be visorless, and now he is one of the few remaining players in the league without a visor. So he just slipped under the cut there. And so there'll probably be someone in a similar circumstance that 10 years from now is still skating without a bucket because they got in the league early. But let's face it, some teams like the Leafs already require their players to wear helmets and warm-up, so this won't change anything for them. And, you know, it's not that many guys that are going bucketless anyway at this point.
That's true. Really appreciate taking time, as always, CJ. We'll chat again next week.
All right. Be well.
All right. There he goes. Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider.
Gotta love CJ.
Gotta love him.